Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome you. I'm sorry my voice is not as strong as it normally is, but I would like to welcome everybody to the December 3rd study session for the Mesa City Council. All of our council is present. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review the agenda for our meeting after this upstairs. And because this is the last study session we'll have before the meeting on the 10th, we're also going to be reviewing both agendas for tonight's meeting and then a week from tonight. And then, as you know, traditionally we have council meetings on the first and third Monday. Month of December, we'll have it on the first and second Monday, and because of the holidays, not take off the last two Mondays, right? Everybody clear on that? Yeah. So, council, if you could please, first let's focus on the agenda for tonight, December the 3rd. Any questions or concerns regarding that agenda? Currently, the only items off, we have three items off the consent agenda. That's the photo safety enforcement program, enacting the election for the quarter cent sales tax dedicated to public safety, and a minor general plan amendment related to a zoning case. I think, Mr. Brady, we do have a staff presentation on the photo safety program. Is that correct?
We have some follow-up from some questions the council had.
Okay. Council, before we get to that, is there any questions on any other item on the agenda before we get to that?
Mayor.
Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to make a comment on 5C. This is creation of the irrigation water delivery districts. I know it's not a big deal to staff, but it is to the neighborhoods. When we create these, when the neighborhoods go in and create this irrigation districts, it allows them to maintain their irrigation districts and coordinate repairs. So I appreciate staff working with everybody involved, because these are a big deal and helps cut down costs and helps owners become more responsible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Council, any other questions on agenda items before we take on agenda item 8A? If not, Mr. Reed, why don't we go ahead and Mr. Pombier? There were some questions raised, I think, in our study session last Thursday regarding this item, but anxious to see your presentation on it.
You got the com over here?
Sure.
Mayor, I've got a quick presentation that we can run through to address some of those issues, and then obviously we'll be here for questions throughout. As we begin the presentation, you can see that our... Wait, go back one. We skipped to... I think you can use the arrows. Yeah, you're good.
There we go.
As you can see, we don't really call it a photo enforcement. We call it a photo safety program, and we focus on three things. We focus on education, engineering, and enforcement. All three of those things are very paramount to how we run this program. And as you'll see later, while some statistics are up and down, we have one overall statistic that we believe points directly to our three-pronged approach on how we do this. On the second page of the presentation, it shows you the active locations, which we discussed before. But I think the stat on here that is telling is the recidivism rate. 94% of the people who get these citations only get them once. As a 15-year criminal prosecutor, I'll tell you, if we could match that in any other aspect of criminal law, we'd be doing a heck of a job. That's a great number that shows you that this program, this enforcement aspect of the program, has a lasting effect on the people who get those citations. As we move on to the third page, this just shows you the location of the new sites, the one at Carriage Lane, the one in Southeast Mesa, and the one at Red Mountain High School. Those are our three newest sites, two traffic red lights and one school zone. And as you can tell, I'm moving fast because I know time is of the essence. The next one shows two things. One, it shows that there have been studies done. This has actually been on our website for quite a few years from the governor's office. That show there's a wide variety of support for these types of issues. As in most issues, the people you hear from the most are the people who are unhappy about it. But we have a wide variety of people who support these types of programs. And to go beyond the study, if you look at the number of complaints that we get and what ATS get, I believe it comes down to less than one half of 1%, or some number like that. Chris is much better with numbers than I am, as he sits up and realizes that it just made something up. But that number of 5 complaints a year, given the number of citations we do, is almost insignificant. And when you compare that to what ATS also gets, you can see that this is not something that we get far more complaints from officers who do stops than we do from these traffic cameras. And so it's important to understand the way we run that this program is a way that we believe the residents of Mesa overall overwhelmingly support. Go on.
Before you leave that slide,
yes.
John.
Go back.
I can tell you, I personally have received some complaints over the last year, and I'm a little skeptical to buy in totally to this statistic that says, and I'm not trying to be critical of the program, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I think the statistic that's circled, 85% of residents are in favor of the cameras. What's the source of that statistic?
This has been on our website for quite a few years, and I think what Sergeant Londotto would tell you is we got the vast majority of this information comes from the Governor's Office of
Highway Safety. Yeah,
Highway Safety. So that is our understanding. We've been trying to double check that source because it doesn't say so on our website. We've been trying to double check that source, but that's where everything else on that page came from, and that's where we believe this came from.
Okay, so this is a statistic from the governor's office.
From surveys that were done in the past. Now, if you notice, I think the last survey is over 5 years old, okay. And a lot of things change over time, but these are the two most recent surveys we have of Mesa residents.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
As you go to the next site, and this is perhaps where the data begins to show a little bit more of the story, you see that we talk about the school zone data and how much speeds have dropped when school is in session from 35 miles an hour is the speed limit to when school is out of session at 45 miles per hour a second. The other two charts on there will basically tell you that as speed reduces, your chances of surviving an accident greatly increase. And as we discussed before, part of our program has been education in those school zones to teach people if they slow down, we can better protect the lives of our students and our citizens in those areas. Go ahead. Next, in terms of program successes.
Actually, got to look. Okay.
On this slide, this is where we want to talk about the actual data. And I'm not huge on data, and there are people in this room that know it a lot better than I do. But if you look at the actual crash data that we sent out to you per intersection, and what our traffic engineers will quickly tell you behind us, and by the way, transportation has been a great partner in this. They do amazing work, and they probably can explain this much better than I can. But we have some intersections, since we put in cameras, where traffic accidents have reduced. We have some where it stayed stable. And we've had some where they've actually gone up. So the data is all over the board. So why are we so forceful or supportive of this program? I think it's because when you take all three of our prongs, education, engineering, and enforcement, that we believe we get this answer right here that shows on this page. While accidents across the state went down by about 15%, in Mesa it was 35%. And we think it's because of all three of the things we do. Traffic engineering of our intersections, our enforcement, and our education. We think all three of those things lead to exactly what you're seeing here on this page, which is a reduction in actual traffic accidents. Now, obviously, I can't... Go ahead, man.
But the box that circled was this 35% reduction. Is that citywide, or is that, it seems like that's only at the intersections where we are doing photo enforcement?
The top table refers to citywide. Collisions citywide.
Okay. Now, I see Mesa A and Mesa B. What's the difference? And they're similar
numbers.
And
I had pulled that off of there. I do have a copy of it. I don't know off the top of my head what the data source B was, but in regards to the point we're bringing out, it has to do with how we compare against regionally total collisions citywide, not just in photo safety.
Okay, so that's an impressive statistic, and I thought you were overstating, because in the bottom it says active photo enforcement locations 35%, but you're saying that's the number citywide, not just in the intersections where we have photo enforcement.
So the bottom table talks about serious injury accidents. So two different topics. We're talking total collisions, and the second one talks about the serious injury collisions, which is much more demonstrative in our data that we can show.
Okay, so the serious injuries have been reduced by 35.5% in the locations that we're using photo enforcement.
Correct.
And then citywide, there's been a reduction of 35.4% in motor vehicle accidents.
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Yes.
I have one question. If I'm analyzing the data correctly, I'm assuming there's only been 11 serious injury crashes from 2001 to 2005. And from 2007 to 2016, there was only 7.1 and that's where the 35.5% reduction is coming from. So there's not, if I'm understanding that correctly, there's not a significant amount of data.
That's the annual average.
This should be per location, not total.
I think there's an annual average of, right, of 11 per year, and now the annual average is 7 per year.
I got it. Okay, thank you. Okay, move on. You're right. I was reading it
four.
Incorrectly.
Yeah. Four.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good.
This next slide is something the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety did, and they showed the difference between when you have cameras that are activated and when you turn them off. So as much as it's hard to say what happens when you add a camera, what their study shows is when you take those cameras away, you see an increase in accidents. And once again, it's another prong to this that we believe helps show the value of our program. We spent a lot of time on Thursday talking about program reinvestments. I won't read through each one of these for you, as everybody in this room can read, but the traffic department has done a great job, through Ms. Ellis, of asking us for certain things. As you can see where we spent the money in the past, we've put it towards some good programs. I highlighted for you last time Guerrero Elementary and how important it was that we had the money available to be able to give them what they thought would protect their students. We have many future opportunities lined out, and we will continue to use some of the funds that come from this program to reinvest in our community and in the traffic engineering we believe helps make this program a success.
Okay, I'm sorry, John. I have a question on this as well, but go ahead, Chris.
No. Well, first.
Go ahead. All right, I'll start. My understanding, I know we haven't got to the slide yet that talks about what the amount of income that's produced by this, or the revenue, but I think it's roughly $2 million, but then about $1 million in court fees are deducted from that. So the amount that from this program that goes to the general fund is roughly $1 million.
That's correct, Matt.
Your slides will tell us that later. So if you look at the what we've spent the money on, the money we've spent on traffic safety in the first set of bullet points, you know, that's maybe a couple hundred, you know, $200,000 or $300,000, which is obviously less than $1 million per year that is coming to the city general fund. So the argument could be made that it's nice to label it a traffic safety program, but it's actually a revenue-producing program. It produces more revenue than we use for traffic safety. Now, I don't believe that's true. I believe that if we were to actually...
Yeah, Mayor, we're not counting for all signalized intersections that we include every year.
Yeah.
We think about the pedestrian... What do you want to call them, RJ?
Pedestrian hybrid beacons.
Pedestrian hybrid beacons.
Pedestrian, yes. It's a lot easier to say the name brand.
Yes.
But pedestrian hybrid beacons, and we've had discussions about putting those in around the city. Those are about, what, RJ, 250, 300,000? We had it, remember in our bond package for the canals, we actually reduced some of the scope of that project, which included pedestrian crossing. So right there, I think between RJ and the two of us, we could probably come up with $500,000 to $750,000 in about 5 minutes.
Right. So I think this slide
that are pending.
It understates the investment that the city's making in traffic safety and pedestrian safety. So it also plays to the critics of this program where they say, well, this is more about revenue generation than it is about traffic safety. And I think that's a fair criticism to make, you know, based on some of the information that we're providing. What would happen if we were, as a council, to say to staff, we want to see how the revenues from this program are spent? And so we'd like to have a separate budget item that tracks the revenues from this program and compare that to what we're spending on traffic and pedestrian safety programs. What I believe is that the revenue coming from this is going to be less than... Right. The revenue, what we're spending on traffic safety. If it's not, then I think our priorities are out of whack, and we need to make some adjustments. But I don't believe that's the case.
Right, and Mayor, I would suggest even we would take that to the point where we could say, whatever the estimate, the number is, we could bring those list of projects to the council, because every year, I think almost every district has a need for some kind of traffic safety infrastructure or driver feedback signs, pedestrian crossing signs, new signals. You know, as long as they meet the criteria that we have in traffic engineering, and there are many out there, I think we'd bring those to council to be very transparent. about the dollars that are being collected here and the specific list of projects that we would be budgeting that would be funded from those funds. We could do that.
Okay. So, I haven't run this by my fellow council members, but if there were an appetite to do that, to ask staff to track the revenues and apply them to pedestrian and traffic safety projects in the city, because I think we all acknowledge that Mesa is a relatively safe city, and we've seen we're trending in a good direction. But still, I mean, there are horrible traffic accidents on a regular basis in our community that are injuring and killing people, and I think it's a justifiable cause for us to take on, saying we're going to apply these revenues to try to impact that problem in our community. And so we need to sell this, and if people need to understand that that's where the money is going. This is not a milking operation for us to get money out of the people that use our streets. Anyway, that's my two cents at this point. If there's no one else. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yes, Chris. Okay. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Freeman.
Okay. You got me going here a little bit and thinking. I don't consider it a milking program, because if a person violates a traffic law, they're issued a citation. And that citation is now not done by a officer on the street that witnessed it, but by an automated program. So there's a violation that occurs. We're just now, through the process of the traffic violation, we collect a fine, and that fine is then going to pay for our safety program. And that's what I'm engaged in, is if we can develop safety programs for the good of the community, and I talked about perhaps lecture and partnership with Mesa Public Schools reaching into the high schools, because I feel that's important. But to teach teenagers as well as older people, I did my own personal survey. I sent it out just a random email to blind carbon copy 10 people in my district, and it was about 50-50. So I think I'm still 50-50. So I'm waiting for, you know, more information here as we go move forward.
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, the ATS, the company that we work with, has already helped us produce, I believe, 5 or 6 PSAs. They'd be more than willing to work with us towards getting something that we could get into the schools for some of our younger drivers, so that we're getting to them very early about the importance of their speed and what can happen if you don't watch that. They've been a great partner in this, and I have no doubt that they'll help us make those so we can air them with the Mesa Public Schools and on Channel 11.
Yes, Mr. Luna.
So, John, I appreciate all what you've been doing. You know, certainly seeing what the difference it's made at Red Mountain High School. As I said, you know, I worked in the Mesa Public Schools for many years, and being around the high school students that are just learning how to drive, and having these traffic signals to mitigate some of the potential accidents that could occur, it has dramatically changed how kids are driving. And so I can see it. I see the potential it has. Certainly saw what happened at Guerrero Elementary School, having the traffic mitigation signals there to deter potential drivers hitting pedestrians, and especially the crosswalk personnel. I think what you're doing there is important, and I'd like to see more of that. So I'm going to be supporting this as it moves forward.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, I've never been a real big fan of photo radar, but the simple fact is, if you obey the speed laws and you obey the traffic laws, there wouldn't be a need for photo radars. It's not like we can pay an officer, you know, to sit out at an intersection for 24 hours a day, where we can, for a fraction of that cost, we can put a camera out to ensure that people are obeying those laws, versus having a motor officer or a patrol officer sitting out there 24/7. Back to the mayor's point, I think it's a really great idea to split out outside of the budget what would normally be budgeted for our traffic signals and so forth. So when you look at future opportunities, things that aren't within the budget that may come up throughout the year. For example, the Guadalupe, the Highland Junior High issue that came up earlier this year. If we had dollars that were sitting in an account where we could order the traffic signals or the Hawk systems or whatever it was, that could be utilized in those situations. You know, I think the mayor's actually onto something in that situation. So look outside of what's already being budgeted. What can we do on top of that for the safety of our communities?
And Mayor and Council, and RJ, correct me if I'm wrong. So today, if you didn't have this fund and we didn't have these dollars to fund these other traffic signal infrastructure, the request comes to RJ for a pedestrian crossing or another traffic signal, those dollars come out of his streets fund. So what that means is it's not competing necessarily in the general fund, it's competing against pavement. It's they're in the same pot, right? So it's either you buy a traffic signal or you fix a pothole. So that's kind of where, I guess, the choices are today. And so obviously using this source of funding, as you're suggesting, we would set aside specifically, and it would just be, you know, things related, whether it's education or actual photo safety, or not photo safety, driver feedback signs or crossing signs, we could do that.
And I think that's one of the issues that are not an issue, but the hardest part to explain sometimes to citizens is like, you know, how come you can't just go out and put a signal or a street light or what have you out on a roadway? And it's, you know, you have a limited pot of money that you have seven of us that are fighting over. And it's not that easy just to have somebody, you know, all of a sudden say, you know what, yeah, I'll give you my $200,000 because I'd rather you have the Hawk system than my citizens in my district. So, you know, you have to explain that sometimes to the citizens that they understand that there is this limited pot of money and you're either having the potholes fixed, the lane widened out, or you're having a turn signal put in. So which one is the more important? And I think if you were able to split them off, then you'd have those funds available.
Thank you. Move on. The next part, we were requested to show the citation process. This kind of looks like a Venn diagram, probably not the easiest to read on your screen. I won't try to read all of them, but it walks through what happens when a citizen gets one of these tickets and what the court process is, if they need to be served, what happens then, and all the way up to the end, and what can happen in court if they go to court, if they go to school, or how they take care of it. Where we think the process becomes even more important is as you turn the page and you look at our activity. This is the chart we were talking about, the number of times the cameras flash versus the number of citations we issue. First, ATS reviews to see if they see anything, and if they see something that's questionable, they kick it out. Then they send it to the Mesa Police Department, and we have a member of the Mesa Police Department review these citations, and they kick some out. So we end up with, I want to say, about 60-65% of the actual flashes end up in citation. So the first step of the process before the individual ever gets the citation, it goes through two sets of review. And that gives us a firm confidence that we're dealing with citations that would stand up within traffic court. And you can see those numbers are nowhere near high. I mean, I think 50, as low as 50% and as high as 65%. The next one that we go to is the expenses and revenue report. As the mayor has already alluded, after the direct expenses and the revenue that is already obligated to the courts through restricted fund revenue, we have about $1 million left. One of the things we leave out of this presentation is there is one additional arm to our enforcement that I don't think should get lost here. Traffic enforcement is also done every day by the men and women that work for the Mesa Police Department. That number, as this council well knows, easily dwarfs that $1 million also, just in what we spend in our police department. So part of our traffic enforcement is also funded by the general fund, which comes over from some of this money. So we feel very strongly that those two things together on the enforcement end, what our men and women the officers do and what these cameras do, gives our citizens the best level of protection. One question was about the volume that we use on this. We will have, after this is all said and done, 20 intersections out of about, I think RJ told me, over 400.
466.
466. So less than 5% of our intersections actually have these cameras. This is not something we're out to get you. This is purely an education mode that we want people to slow down in certain areas, be it our school zones or our high volume traffic signals. The last slide I have for you before I get to questions is, as part of this extension of this contract, we will have available to the newer technology that ATS has. And you can see the difference in those photos. We hope that that leads us, when we have flashes, to make sure we are even more certain of the individuals that we actually send the citations to. That's the value of better cameras, is more confidence in how we do it as it goes through both levels of those review. Our last slide is for questions. I tried to fly through that as quickly as I possibly could. Sit back and take any questions this council has.
Thank you. I had two questions. The first has been addressed, and that's that I'd like to get a better accountability for what the income or the revenues from the program are compared to the how that money is being spent for pedestrian and traffic safety programs. The second and it is related to school zones. I know that I think there's less pushback on the red light cameras because I think most people acknowledge how terribly dangerous it is for folks to run red lights. And then the speed cameras, though, that we have in front of the various school locations, I think people also understand the importance of enforcing traffic laws in and around school zones during school. But some of the pushback that I hear on this program is, hey, not during school hours. It turns from a safety device into a speed trap. So my question would be, what if we regulated the hours of operation for those speed cameras, and had them only in effect during school hours when we can justify that tie that to student safety versus just an opportunity for us to take your picture if you're speeding?
Mayor, Council, I think the first response I would have to that is what we're trying to teach people in general in our community is when you're in a school zone, you need to slow down, period. Secondly, Mayor, it is very difficult for us to set any of those hours. There are after-school functions. Many of our schools that have these have fields that are used by teams on weekends, odd hours, things like that. Plus, people take their kids to these playgrounds to play during hours. The message we're trying to send is whether it's 35 or 45, we think exceeding the speed limit at those times in these areas is never okay. And so we are very firm, and we want to educate that you slow down when you're in a school zone. And as much as I understand what you're saying, they become, in effect, a mid-block speed camera on the off hours. We don't truly know when those off hours are going to be, and we do not have the capability to adjust those on a daily basis, depending on which school has what activity going, depending on which Little League team is using a field on which day. So the message we're trying to say is, in these specified areas, the community as a whole wants you to slow down, because we think that's the better message than trying to time it.
But John, council could, if that's their direction, we could just establish, just like you drive through a school zone today and you see the lights flashing for a specific period of time. And I understand the point is our after school programs, and we're concerned about that. And actually the history we have is that's when the legacy of what happened here was the tragedy that actually happened after school. But if that's what council wants to do in the school zones, obviously we could. It would just have to be a generic, it applies to elementary schools or middle schools, right? And just set it those hours, and that's it. But I think the vulnerability is as John's saying, there's other times that there may be activities. But if we're only going to set it, if we're always just going to set it for school times and a specific time, we could do that. We can't adjust it every day, but we could set it for school day, just like you have flashing yellows when you go through a school zone, you know that it's there from whatever, 8 or 7 to 4, whatever it is, yeah.
I think it would bolster our credibility with the community if we did that, frankly, and take away the suspicion that this is an excuse to generate revenue. I live across the street from an elementary school, and I know how dangerous, and I mean, I think everybody in that environment during school, during school hours is would be very supportive of any type of traffic enforcement that we could have. If we could afford to have a motor officer there every day, I think everybody would love that. But I think the attitude is different during non-school hours. And sure, there are always activities at night and on weekends related to school, but you don't have that intense environment where you've got sidewalks full of young children and a heightened potential for a disaster. So I think that's a far less compelling scenario for justifying photo enforcement than during school hours. Mr. Luna.
Having worked in schools for 40 years, you're still going to have the same kids. if you do it from, let's say, from 7:30 to 4 o'clock, there are so many extracurricular activities that these kids are involved in. They're still going to be the same drivers. So I wouldn't change what we have in place. I would just leave it the way it is. That would be my concern, because we don't want anybody to die.
I respect that. Like I say, I'm just trying to, as I look at the fault, I don't believe the statistic that 85% of our community embraces this program. I think it's maybe something a lot do, but I think there's some skepticism, and I would like to respond to the skeptics, and I think this would be one way to do that. So if I'm in the minority on this, that's okay. I'll vote to support the program regardless, but I was curious to kind of take the council's temperature on the school zone issue and see what you thought. Yes, Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Thompson. I beat you.
Oh, go ahead.
How are the intersections chosen, by traffic volume or motor vehicle accidents, or how do we, again, choose intersections that we have currently today?
Quite frankly, it's usually there's some sort of catalyst, much like the most recent one would be at Guadalupe and Carriage Lane. This actually came from the community. We were receiving calls complaining about people running the lights westbound at that location. And so we went out there and studied it. And in fact, we were seeing people run lights. We did speed studies. Speed is probably the primary factor that's the deciding point. But all of it's looked at. What type of collisions, the speeds that are going through there, what violations are observed. And then it's either, you know, unfortunately, it's usually a terrible accident or something from the community.
But the original intersections back, how long ago? 13 years ago? Something like that? Yeah, where that was
chosen by traffic.
Chosen by both. No, well, it was accidents, and PD and traffic got together and put those.
Yeah,
together.
If you remember our you know, like we had our 10 deadliest intersections, right. You know, that have since been re-engineered, like Dobson and Southern. You know, cameras came down from there and haven't gone up because engineering's taking care of it.
And I can tell you that the school zones were based on speed. The speed that the individual drivers were going through those areas required us to put something in there that got them to slow down.
I have a follow-up question. You know, because of my prior employment, life safety is very important to me. And I've weighed this very seriously because I've seen what these accidents have done in intersections. So I've also weighed the public's input on people I've contacted, and I understand that they're concerned, but then I go back to the fact that they created a traffic violation, again, that wasn't caught by a human being, but was caught by an automated system. And of course, we have to pay a service for that because we're not going to go out and monitor and pay for this system. And the other thing that I weigh in is the revenue stream that we've collected and how that's paid for and the traffic violations through the court system. And then the reallocation of those funds through safety and education, which is important to me. The other part, Mr. Brady talked about, and RJ, about if we didn't have this funding stream, then we would have to fund this out of the budget, out of certain line items. And so I guess I don't want us to be caught into a trap where financially we have to rely on these funds to create these safety programs, yet at the same fact, they are beneficial to some extent, even though you got caught. I'm sorry, pay your fine. And there's a 55 to 60%, I think you said, recovery on a photo, according to your notes. So 55 to 60% are actually...
Of captures versus actual citations issued, yes.
Yeah. So those are the people that actually receive the fine and actually pay
citations,
it at the end of the day.
Yes.
I'll just be flat out. I'm going to support the program. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, and I agree with Councilmember Luna. If we were going to have red light cameras, or if we're going to have safety, photo safety cameras anywhere, to me, they would be at schools. I would love to have one in sitting in front of Highland Junior High. I mean, the people fly down Guadalupe in front of that junior high, even though the flashing, you know, 35-mile-per-hour signs are out, people are routinely doing 50. When I used to go and drop my kids off there many years ago, I would sit at the when the safety officer would come out with the crosswalk crossing guard would come out with their sign, and even with the person standing in the middle of the roadway with a sign, people are still running through the intersection or through that crosswalk with children and so. For me, I mean, if I'm going to support these, I would support having them at schools, and so I wouldn't change anything about the time frames on schools because I think it creates confusion overall for the drivers. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, I thought I'd throw it out there. My preference would be to tie the school zones to school activity, to coming to and from school. So they don't just become generic photo enforcement zones after that. But I'll support the program, and if I'm in the minority on that idea, I can live with that. Again, we're just reviewing the agenda for upstairs. So,
Mayor, what I hear direction from council is maybe during this upcoming budget discussion, one of the discussions we'll have, making an assumption here, if the words were to be approved upstairs, then one of the items we'd bring to the council is a discussion about and a list of these other kinds of projects I've heard today and other suggestions related to traffic safety, pedestrian safety around the city. And we would provide a list of those projects, discuss those with council, make sure they meet your expectations, and then we could just monitor the revenue over the years and allow us to fund those. So I think that's what I heard from council.
I've seen heads nodding, so okay. Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Jeremy.
Which department today currently sees the excess revenue generated by the program? Does that excess immediately go over transportation, or does that stay in PD?
No.
And does PD, how does that, flow?
No department. Departments like to think they have revenues. They don't. I make that clear to them every year. They may collect fees and permit fees, but they all go back to the better good, the greater good of the city as a general. RJ, because the city back in 1986 approved a sales tax for streets specifically. So there is a street sales tax fund that specifically we track, and those dollars then are used for maintenance and operations of the traffic department, including paving and other items such as the many of the items we're talking about here. So the revenues are received from citations, whether they're photo radar or otherwise, those are collected and then they go into the general fund overall budget as part of just the revenues that come into the city. But I think what we're proposing here is to be more specific, I think, is to create a specific separated identity of the revenues coming from this program, and then specifically through the council process, identify projects equal to that amount that we could help address traffic safety throughout the city.
Okay, so that I understand. So then next year, our budget would contain a specific line item or a fund of the excess revenue generated from this program, and then I'm assuming today that goes into the general fund, so that money would be extracted from the general fund into
correct.
This own fund.
Correct, it would be
fund.
Fewer dollars. Yeah, it'd be net of what we're already funding. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the second question I had was, John, I know you and I had spoke earlier about the speed on green as far as the camera goes. Can you clarify, the red light cameras, will they be issuing speeding citations as well, or only if the individual runs a red light? That's an improvement to the program, right?
It's two separate things. So it's triggered if they run the red light at any speed, and it's triggered if they're speeding.
And that's a new thing.
It was a new thing probably 3 or 4 years ago. Speed on green was something that was new that all of the companies that handle this type of program added on because what they saw was people gunning it to get through the intersections. So it used to just be strict red light cameras. 3 or 4 years ago, they added on this ability for speed on green, and now they run it pretty much on all the cameras that they have.
But are we
enforcing
speed on green?
What?
Speed on green is only in the school district, or the
no. If you go through an intersection,
oh, in
over
addition
the,
to, okay.
Yeah, in addition. So if you, it's a red light or speed on green.
So as it sits today, the red light cameras are actually dual function. Without the individual running a red light, if they are speeding today, those cameras will issue citations for speeding, because I've never seen that. I've never seen that.
Is there speed on green?
Yeah, there is speed on green on these things. The reason it came to be is what we talked about. What we saw was a lot of people gunning it get through the intersection, and so that's when it generally picks it up. So generally, you're going to see a citation for both, because unfortunately, they don't generally make it, but there is a speed on green aspect to this.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. So, well, this will be on the agenda upstairs, and obviously we've had a lot of discussion now, and we'll see how much we want to do upstairs. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda, RJ, thanks for sticking around, is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on staff recommendations for regulating shared active transportation vehicles.
Mayor, and after we do this, we're going to go back and do the 10th agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. 10th agenda item is the
one that we are...
December 10th. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Yes.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I skipped over that.
So we can do this, but we need to go back and probably review the December 10th.
Thank you.
Mayor, members of the council, good evening again. I am RJ Zeter with the Transportation Department. To my right is El Zubi. He is one of our supervising engineers who oversees our bike and ped program. Eric Darien to my left, Deputy Director for Traffic Engineering, and Andrew Calhoun, Management Assistant. We've all been involved on this conversation. Shared active transportation vehicle. It's kind of a mouthful. I'll try to go quickly. I know you've got a lot to discuss. We actually copied this from our neighbor to the west, Tempe. You'll also hear this referred to as dockless, whether it's bikes or scooters or e-bikes. You'll also hear it referred to as micro-mobility devices. This is one of the catchphrases that you'll see out there right now. But essentially, it's anything that is a shared vehicle that is used within the public right-of-way that doesn't require docking, as you might be knowledgeable about with the grid system, you know, that initially came in with bikes. That's a docked system where folks actually have to park and lock the bikes at a specific location. The rentals can vary minutes to hours. As an example, right now from the research we've done, the scooters that you're seeing out there are in the $1 to rent, and then about 15 cents a mile, on top of the initial dollar fee. And people can do that. Oh, sorry, 15 cents a minute. Forgive me. And people can use their cell phone, their smartphone with an app to release the vehicle and then lock it when they're done. Currently, there are two companies primarily that have motorized scooters in Mesa. That's Bird and Lime. You may also see every now and then a red scooter that's operated by Razor, a company. To our knowledge, they haven't, quote, staged any vehicles in Mesa, meaning placing them, but we do see some bleed over from time to time, primarily from Tempe. The OFO bikes came in, and almost as quickly as they came in, they went back out, although you'll still see a smattering of them that have lingered about being used in Mesa, but they're not being rented. Why involve the city? The issue from a traffic engineering, from a transportation standpoint, primarily revolves around right-of-way management and ensuring that operators are properly staging their vehicles, if allowed, dealing with complaints, as well as rebalancing them, meaning day-to-day that, where the scooters start from may not be where they end up, and that there's a process that, the shared active vehicle is put in the place that it belongs, as well as data collection, so that we as a city have the ability to see where and how the vehicles are being used. Issues that we're currently facing, as I touched on, and you can see this when you're driving around, we have met, and there's representatives from both Bird and Lime here in the audience. One of the benefits to the scooters we're seeing right now, as opposed to the bikes, is that the scooter companies have to physically touch their inventory really every day. The bikes, they did not. So if a bike was parked someplace where it was not supposed to be parked. We were relying on the company, but sometimes complaints come in and that could take more time. Whereas with the scooters, because they have to be charged, are physically pulled off of the right-of-way, charged off-site, and then brought back the next day. But we do have concerns or issues at times with blocking handicap ramps for sidewalks, just blocking sidewalks in general, and not allowing for a clear path for folks with a disability. Bus stops can be an issue, as well as blocking entrances into businesses. Also, we do hear from folks that bikes and or scooters have been left on private property, and the owners, you know, may have concerns about that. Operator responsiveness, again, at least with the scooter companies that are in Mesa now, that's been better than it was with at least one of the bike providers. At times, the with one of the bike providers I won't name, I actually sent an email to their general customer service, as anybody would, and 10 days later I got a customer satisfaction survey, but never got a response to the original concern that I lodged. But we're doing better right now with Lime Bird. These bikes or scooters can be vandalized, and we've seen that. I think Al at one point had to go over a fence to get one back off, you know, someone's property. You may have read a story about a charger apparently pulled a scooter out of a pool and decided it'd be a great idea to charge it in her apartment. Didn't work out so well for the scooter or the apartment, I'm told, but that's an isolated incident. And then there's concerns that get raised just about aesthetics within the right-of-way. Safety concerns, speed is a concern of ours.
Excuse me, RJ.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Mr. Whitaker.
Not that related, but yeah. The scooter that exploded in the apartment, are you indicating that that scooter actually came out of a pool before they charged it? That's the reason why it exploded, not just because it randomly exploded?
According to the Arizona Republic, that is
okay.
What happened.
I just wanted to make that. Thank you.
Speed concerns. The roadway system was not designed for the shared active vehicles, specifically the scooters. Obviously, they're out there. They're popular. They're being used. But the roadway system was not designed with that motorized device in mind. These scooters can be speed limited. We know that one of the vendors, perhaps both that are operating right now, limit the top speed to 15 miles an hour. But with an inexperienced user at 15 miles an hour, that still can create safety issues. One of the vendors actually has a program for offering helmets through its app. Sorry.
Mr. Freeman. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Mr. Luna.
So, RJ, so you're riding one of these scooters, you fall, and you break your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Who's liable? Is it the scooter company, or is it the individual? Or what if it's a kid?
One of the things we're seeking is direction from mayor and council as to how to move forward. One approach is to create a licensing structure around the companies that are operating scooters or e-bikes or whatever the next technology may bring, and there would be an indemnification and insurance provision within the license that would require those providers to hold the city harmless. So I don't want to get into there's user acceptance agreements, and I don't know how those affect minors that may be riding scooters that shouldn't be riding scooters, but at a city level, if council directs us to, you know, create a licensing structure, we would look for insurance and indemnification from the companies.
Sure.
Maybe, RJ, you might not be the one to answer it. Maybe the vendors would. But inexperienced users really bother me because I see young people out there, you know, I know they're 12, 13 years old using these, and then they're riding on sidewalks. They're in the road right-of-ways, and they really shouldn't be riding these things, but yet we're allowing them. So I'm wondering what our liability is as a city. You know, recently I just saw three people on one, and an adult with two children, and I thought, well, that's really not built for that structurally. But I think there's a lot of unknowns there in my mind as you go through the presentation. I probably have another couple of questions, but that's where I'm at.
On that point, we are working with Mr. Smith and his staff. So if council does direct us to move towards some sort of regulation, that is something we want to try to address.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, Jim. Is there a way, because I know we just had an issue not too long ago where somebody hit a guide wire on a pole that was not ours, and the city was just as liable. And so is there a way to indemnify the city if it happens on city property, if it happens within the city right away? Can we be indemnified?
Yeah. Mayor and Council, Councilmember Thompson. Yeah, we'll include a broad indemnity, duty to defend and hold harmless in the city, and also insurance. And so, you know, that's still to be negotiated, and so that's going to be an important part of this, whether or not they're willing to provide that. But that would be a key, obviously.
Thank you. Proceed.
Sure. Again, helmets specifically. One of the providers does have an option through their app that I found last week, you know, that you can get a helmet. You have to pay a shipping fee. But realistically, there's no way to, I think, enforce that. I think that is an issue. I've not yet seen a person wearing a helmet on a scooter. I'm not saying they're not wearing them. I'm only stating my own observations. So that is, you know, and we have heard from some folks who have stated that their children, for example, have been injured, you know, on the scooters.
A question on that. Do we require, I'm assuming we require helmets on bikes. Is there an ordinance that exists today for just a regular bike?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, there is no requirement that helmets be worn. For motorcycles, for bicycles, and I'm not an expert at state statute, but I don't believe that at the state level there's any requirement that helmets are required on motorized vehicles.
I was trying to remember that. Is there a mandate for helmets for motorcyclists that are of a certain age, minors?
Okay. I know on recreational vehicles, anyone under 18 has to wear a helmet.
I believe that's correct. Andrew did find some, was looking at statutes today, and I believe that's correct. But for adults, there's no requirement that helmets be worn.
Are we talking about requiring helmets then for these?
We would seek direction from council. We have not gotten that far. Again, I think enforcement of that, though, is challenging.
Okay.
Approach regulation versus non-regulation, some of the things I've touched on, right-of-way management, requiring operators to respond, restage, rebalance, as well as aesthetics. You know, more free market approach is to allow, you know, the vendors or the operators to work without regulation. The con to that, of course, is that there's less control of what's happening within our right of way. Approached by other cities quickly, Phoenix adopted an ordinance last summer. It only addressed bikes at this point. That's what was all, you know, the big issue was, you know, the bike companies being in town. So they have not yet addressed scooters or other technology. They have a requirement that's called Lock 2, meaning that the bike itself, bikes in this case, would have to have a device that would allow the bike to be physically locked to something. We have concerns about that as a staff, because if the bike is locked to something, we don't want it locked to. It actually may be more challenging to deal with that, since we wouldn't immediately have the ability to remove or impound a bike violating one of our regulations. Tempe is moving through their process and anticipate that they will, in fact, implement a right-of-way license for shared active transportation vehicles in February of 2019. Scottsdale took a slightly different approach. They did not create a licensing process, but they created a bunch of stipulations by city code about where you can park things and fines for the vehicles being in inappropriate places. But to my knowledge, they are not pursuing licensing at this point. So the staff recommendation, again, we're seeking council direction on this, that should we create a license, should we create terms and conditions that go with that license, as well as we would need to make modifications to the city code. We actually found inadvertently that there's some pretty old language in the city code requiring bicycle licensing. It has a 3-digit ordinance number, and I think that means it was adopted in 1940 or something back then. So there's some cleanup work that we would need to do. There's some language in there that actually some of our citizens, based on their own research, have pointed out to us that we would likely need to clean up. Quickly, talked about staging, education about proper parking. You know, that's a big issue. You may be aware, if you follow this at all, that ASU and University of Arizona have both banned scooters from their campuses. Working with at least one of the vendors, we'd want to talk to the others as well. The technology itself can be used to help limit no-ride areas, potentially. Again, I've talked about speed being capped, as well as no parking areas, meaning at the end of the ride. We would look, if we're directed to require that the vehicles be restaged every 24 hours, including removing all of the vehicles from residential streets and private property. If we're so directed to work on a license, we would propose no staging of these vehicles within residential on residential streets. There's also impoundment penalties we could talk about, that if the company failed to respond, that city staff would be able to go out and impound the vehicle along with the fee, and then the statistics that we talked about. This is just a concept of a fee structure.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Thompson.
RJ, the piece that I would struggle with, honestly, is the staging in, or I guess I wouldn't really struggle with it, but it's the staging within neighborhoods, mm-hmm. because that was the whole premise of bringing the Lime bikes and some of the other bikes into Mesa, was to be that last piece from the bus stop to the residents, and then from the residents back to the bus stop the following morning or afternoon, what have you, to get on the bus to go to work. So it was part of that transportation model that was sold to council as why Lime and some of these others were great ideas to bring to the city. And now we're saying, well, we don't really want them in neighborhoods. We don't want to stage them in neighborhoods. So that really kind of defeats the whole purpose of having the Lime bikes out anyway, if somebody's going to have to walk from their house to the bus stop to get a bike. So...
Perhaps I should be more specific, Councilmember Thompson. The thought we had, and certainly we're looking for council direction, is that we would prohibit it actually on a residential street, meaning a local street. There may be a possibility for collectors and certainly arterial streets abutting residential neighborhoods. What we were trying to avoid is staging in front of someone's house, because we have already gotten some complaints about that.
So, RJ, when you use the word staging, mm-hmm. is that different than... an individual just dropping it off in front of their house? When you say staging, is that the company actually placing that in front? What do you use the word? Help us with that.
Let me use some of the industry lingo. Staging is the companies themselves purposefully putting the vehicles at a location. So the companies know more than we as a city, you know, can control where the vehicle stops. You know, so someone could certainly drive it into a neighborhood and park it in front of their home. The rebalancing would require the company to then go get it and put it back somewhere else the next day. But staging itself is where the companies place the vehicles, and then getting the vehicles back is another part of the process. So, again, we're open to council direction. We were just trying to last slide. Draw on some feedback that we've gotten from other people.
Yeah, RJ, Council, can I make us, I think at the end of this presentation, and there are some folks in the audience who want to speak on this, I think we're either going to say to staff, yes, please go draft an ordinance and we'll come back and we'll work through all of these
Absolutely.
Issues. Yeah. We don't need to fully debate these issues tonight. Mm-hmm. But it's just a thumbs up, thumbs down on whether we want to have an ordinance come back, a proposed ordinance. And one of my questions, though, is related to this last slide, and maybe Mr. Freeman has the same one. There seems to be a drastically different approach between Tempe and Phoenix in terms of the cost assessed against these companies. Why is that? Is that because this Phoenix ordinance was really aimed at bikes and it was done before the whole scooter phenomenon? Yeah. And I know you're proposing more of a Phoenix fee model, but I don't understand the
difference. Mayor, I think it has everything to do with ASU.
Okay.
And volume. I'm assuming they've been overrun. So, I mean, ASU, once ASU said they're prohibited, I'm sure that Tempe just got, I'm just assuming, but... having heard from their city manager and others, they're overwhelmed.
The Tempe staff actually did a calculation, Mayor, based on what they anticipate their staff load to support the licensing. We don't believe, as Mr. Brady said, that we're going to have the volume of vehicles that Tempe is seeing. This isn't magic. It was sort of a guesstimate of how much staff time would be involved to administer any requirements.
This is another issue that we can continue to debate when the draft ordinance comes back to us, I guess. Jeremy.
I just have one last question. Aren't the scooters, because they're motorized, do they not already fall under the ordinance that a motorized anything else would for the purposes of enforcement, not driving them on a sidewalk or otherwise? Like, where do you draw the line between the definition of a motorized scooter versus any other motorized vehicle?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, I can defer to Mr. Smith. We've spent a lot of time looking at this. There's different statements in different parts of state statute. There's one we were reading today that specifically exempts motorized skateboards. And based on my reading of that, the scooters would count as a motorized skateboard. But there could very well be something somewhere else that does bring them into regulation.
So, Mayor and Council, the definitions are still subject to a lot of change, and so we have to clarify as to what it's going to imply and how other ordinances or statutes will be applicable. So sort of the breadth, but also narrowing it so that it doesn't overlap on another ordinance or statute. Or if it does, we have to work out, well, what's the intent as far as that overlap? Is it consistent with? And so that becomes an issue. So we are aware of the fact that the definition is, it's a work in progress.
I guess outside of rewriting something, does the ordinance already allow today for a police officer to stop somebody who appears to be underaged or doesn't have a license, under the age of 16 or whatever that age is today, to stop them and say, you're driving a motorized vehicle, this is illegal? Or are we not going into that realm until we actually pass something?
I can't remember that part of the state statute as far as the motorized vehicles. So
I think it depends on how the statute applies. If they're not motor vehicles, then that wording would not apply. That, as Mr. Smith said, that's something we need to dig into.
Okay.
Mayor, what we could do for the purpose of time, and there may be other questions, we could even just bring back to, without necessarily a specific ordinance, but just start bringing back to you some bullet points on the items that we would recommend and continue this dialogue and discussion, because this is all new to us, right? It doesn't even fit within our code and trying to figure that out. I think there's cities across the country, I can go on all my professional newsletters and everybody's struggling with this right now. But I think we're learning from others, but we could come back with just a list, not necessarily the ordinance, but kind of here's what we're proposing, yeah, and then just use that as kind of a straw man, white paper, whatever you want, and that the council begin to look at that, get it out to you a week ahead of time, and then we could have another study session, maybe not on a Monday night, where we could then have further discussion on this.
That's how I see us proceeding. Mr. Freeman.
So I just have two things. What's the benefit to the city by having these in the city? And number one, or the last one is, can we ban them from the city?
Okay. We can come back to that.
That's would be answer two bullet points.
Thank you. And we do have a couple of folks I need to get to on blue cards, but Mr. Thompson.
Chris, from your professional papers and white papers and stuff that you're studying, you're saying that other cities are dealing with this. Are there best practices out there that we can learn from?
I think that the body of experience is growing, so I don't know if there's considered a best practice yet because it's still new.
Okay. I just don't want to focus on Phoenix and Tempe and what they're doing, but let's look at maybe some other cities that...
We were hoping by doing that we could try to find some consistency regionally, but obviously it's just all over the place. Okay. So maybe we can broaden our... review of this outside of this area. I was hoping it's a lot easier because these scooters move back and forth and the riders don't know the difference between a Tempe and a Mesa border. I've kind of lost hope maybe based on what we see here. Maybe there's some other fundamentals we can look at, but we'll look at other practices across the country and see what they've done.
I just one request. When we come back with that same report, the thing that I'd like to see is the ridership rates versus light rail, right? So I'd like to see how our citizens are actually choosing to engage, how many are riding light rail per day and how many are actually using these, because there's obviously an inconvenience that comes with light rail that we're willing to deal with because it's a form of transportation, right? So have you guys ran any of those numbers? I guess what I would ask preliminarily, and then can we bring that back when you do your presentation?
We have not done so yet, but as Mr. Birdie said, we're looking at, I'd call them practices.
We can give you light rail numbers. I don't know if we can ask the vendors
to give us the
scooter numbers.
Okay.
We're not requiring at this point, so we'd have to ask.
I think the easiest thing, just leave them in District 4.
This only allowed for there.
There's a spoiler alert for how Mr. Freeman feels about this. I can tell you, I spent the weekend with a group of mayors, and knowing this was on our agenda, I asked several mayors what they thought about this, and this is a national issue. There's a lot to talk about when we have this. Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Luna.
And you might want to tap in the National League of Cities. It is a national issue, and they have a transportation committee, I think, that's dealing with that. Maybe you can ask Mr. Butler to help you out on that.
We'll do that. We are taking it all in right now because, as Mr. Brady said, it's all over the country.
Okay, maybe before we express or provide direction, let's do get to the folks that have come and want to, from the public that want to speak. Thank you, gentlemen, for that report. First, Mr. Robert Allen. Mr. Allen, welcome.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to hearing from you. We have 3 minutes for you to share your thoughts with us.
I appreciate your time. I'm very much in favor of the city regulating these things.
I'd like to see the city not limit how many vendors, because I think competition's good, but to limit how many devices, and maybe even go through that there's renewal process that vendors can, when the renewal comes up once a year or so, that's when a vendor comes in, not just by putting more units on it. I have seen also the inexperience of drivers, and it may be cool if they can program it that near major intersections that it's less than 15. My wife personally saw a scooter come across her and stopped or slowed down, and that scooter could not stop and went into the middle of her lane against a red light, if that made sense, going faster than they can control it. I do encourage that we set a lot more laws or clear regulations like they're doing. I'm all for that. I'm not for scooters on the competing on the sidewalk with pedestrians to put them, next to the sidewalk where the bikes go or with the motor vehicles. Scottsdale has done actually real clear laws about that. They don't even allow scooters on any of the main arteries with four lanes or more, over 25 miles an hour. They have a statute against that. We may not need all the same regulations, but having more. I'd also encourage you to instruct police officers to enforce that with, if they see anyone under 18 without a helmet or appears that way, to question it. And I believe you should have a driver's license to do it. One other thing that I haven't heard anyone do that I strongly encourage is that as part of the licensing, you require the companies to put on a special sticker that they're licensed on here. The key part of the stickers, besides they can have MESA rules on them, is a phone number for a private citizen call if they need that scooter removed. It's in an inconvenient place, that there is a phone number easy to contact that vendor that the citizens can do. Right now, I've talked to some people that's been a problem. They've been dropped off at inconvenient places, and probably like you, there's only an email and never got a response. But those are my biggest things about it. And so I am all for some more regulations for us to control it instead of them controlling us. So I appreciate your attention to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Also have a card from Joshua Miller. Mr. Miller.
Mayor and council members, my name is Joshua and I'm Lime's general manager for the state of Arizona. I'm thrilled to have been working with council and staff to bring our products to the streets of Mesa. In review of staff's presentation, I applaud the team for having a proactive and reasoned approach to regulating shared active transportation vehicles. And we appreciate the transparency and open communication throughout the process. While we're generally supportive of the recommendations, we do share one suggestion regarding the fee structure. I've crafted a letter to mayor and council staff that outlines our recommendation and provides some clarity on noted concerns, and I printed out this letter and supplied it to the clerk. The suggested fee structure recommended in staff presentation is a two-part structure with an annual permit as well as a per-day vehicle permit, and we're simply suggesting a similar structure that includes the annual fee, but a per trip structure. So it would be per trip per vehicle, and we believe that with this structure, an increase in ridership actually translates to an increase in fees collected by the city. So the more we're able to grow, the higher the revenues that's collected by the city. And the details about this can be seen in the letter that I crafted. And with that, I'd like to thank you again for your support of this matter. And I open it up to any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. So I suspect we'll see you in the future when we take this up. I'm sorry, Jeremy. Go ahead.
It's fine. I just one request. If we can get the ridership numbers from your organization, I'd love to see that data.
Absolutely. We can arrange that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, Council, we need to provide some direction. I'm going to suggest my personal opinion is I would like to see staff come back with a draft ordinance for discussion purposes, as I say, and I'd like to see a set aside of a substantial amount of time because, as was indicated, this is a debate that's going on nationwide, and there are long lists of issues to discuss related to this ordinance. So But I do feel it's appropriate to initiate regulation of this and would encourage staff to come back to us with a document that we can work on and hopefully come up with something that we all have feel we can support. Other comments? Okay. Great.
So, Mayor, we'll try to bring that back by the first of the year because in the meantime, there are no regulations and, you know, there are no licenses or going on. So we'll try to bring this council early in the first of the year then.
Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is would not acknowledge receipts of minutes. And frankly, we have a blue card to speak on this item. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry, Mr. Escher. Please cool your jets for just 1 minute. We're going to go. We need to review the agenda for our December 10th council meeting, which I neglected to go over at the beginning of this meeting. So, council, please refer to that document. Currently, there's one item off of the consent agenda, and that is the special use permit for a detoxification facility that was the subject of an agenda item at a meeting or two ago.
For what?
Are there other?
I don't think so. Did you want one? So, Mayor, just real quickly on December 10th, we had the presentation from our fire marshal and our building
right.
official. So everything under item A is related to the revisions to the code so that it allows us to adopt the 2018 building code. It had to be broken up into those pieces in order for us to adopt it, but that's probably the largest portion of this agenda. I just want to bring that to your attention, but that is what was discussed on Thursday.
That's agenda item 8.
Yes.
And each of the paragraphs eight under that.
Through 8A through 8U.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, Mr. Freeman.
On 7A, are we going to have a presentation on that
Hold on.
Eventually?
Oh. Yeah.
The nuisance code update?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so when we do, you know.
Is that, what did we talk about any of that? Okay. We can be prepared to give you a presentation on that afternoon.
Well, I think we can do away with the presentation. I just wanted to add some comments to that. That, you know, as we discuss these nuisance related updates and we're planning to go additional review as related to the past, I'd like to ask code compliance if they could, within the scope of those reviews, include some thought about tightening up the rules to illegal dumping. And that illegal dumping is multifamily housing on streets and right-of-ways. When tenants seem to leave their illegally dumped things on private property and alleyways. And I'd like there to be a way for the city, whether transportation or solid waste, to be able to very quickly remove items, you know, within 48 hours, and or to fine the property owner and the cost to the city for removing and disposing of items. And so I'm just... when we discuss sure. that for the nuisance yeah. code.
I think we can bring the co-compliance, and I think the city attorney's office will need to help weigh in on those issues.
Mr. Russell's here to...
Yeah, but I think there's some legal determinations about how fast we can get on private property and move...
Well, and some of it's on the sidewalk, so when
oh, okay.
it's on the sidewalk,
okay.
I think
sure.
we
okay.
have the
yeah, yeah.
right
no,
to
I was thinking
that,
it was on the
that,
property.
That
okay.
garbage, yeah. But, you know, some of the things I thought about is, you know, how to fund this if we want line items. And Mr. Smith, we can discuss this later. You know, do we charge more on utilities? Do we pull a little bit of money out of the enterprise fund to fund, anyway, clean up within parcels and right-of-ways within our city? A lot of them is a nuisance in some of our districts. So I'm just bringing that up to light, and I've had some citizen complaints on that as well.
Yes, Mr. Whitaker.
On your point, are we saying that the city is going to start removing, if somebody dumps on somebody's property, the city will then go in and remove that?
Only if we have property owner's permission.
It's not on this item. It's
but
for
it's,
future
it's,
con-
it's
discussion.
Just, we're just going to discuss this in the
future.
I just lay some groundwork.
Okay.
I would like to get a presentation on the proposed changes to the nuisance code, and I know that our next meeting is just to introduce or set the hearing date, and so we have really till January the 7th
sure.
to get into the substance of it.
We'll have a presentation for you on the 10th.
Okay, thank you. I would appreciate that. Council, any other questions regarding this agenda item or anything else on the agenda for the 10th of this month? Okay, thanks. We're now then back to the study session agenda. And I do have a card for Mr. Hessler, who would like to speak on agenda item 3. Mr. Hessler, please come forward.
Steve Hessler, 1436 West Jerome. Good evening, council and staff. As a fiscal conservative, surprisingly, I don't have as much problem with public official salaries as people would expect. Recognizing a lot of qualified people don't run for office because it requires financial sacrifice, and overseeing a $1.7 billion budget and nickel and diming a few thousand dollars doesn't make a lot of sense. However, having responsibility is different from taking responsibility and behaving responsibly. The minutes from the November 14th commission meeting make no mention of accountability. Discusses Mesa in terms of size, salaries, and ratios between council and mayor salaries, but ignores how the city compares financially to neighboring communities. We're told the city has high utility rates to compensate for a lack of primary property tax. Yet when the city's tax and services burden is totaled, a process that would reflect this shift, the only city that came out worse was Glendale, a city of similar demographics whose citizens are now being taxed for failed economic development projects. The city's debt rating remains unfavorable to other valley cities, with no signs of abating and new authorizations on the top of 100 millions that already exist. The city runs deficits in relatively good times and plan to continue to do so until they hit the troubling 8% reserve benchmark. This is not responsible. We are told that traditional metrics such as balance sheet and net position are not as important as metrics that measure the ability to extract money from its citizens. This is not responsible. Long-term debt forecast, including...
Mayor, we're off the agenda item. The agenda item is for a receipt regarding minutes for this committee. I haven't heard, I don't think, even one comment. There was one comment initially about the actual minutes. This isn't an opportunity to sort of discuss a...
Well, I'm halfway through.
You might be all the way through, Mr. Esser, because I need you to talk about the agenda item, which
okay,
is...
Okay, the agenda... What wasn't the agenda item?
The minutes.
The minutes. But wasn't it about the report?
Mayor, we already had that on a separate council meeting, and the council already gave direction on that.
Yeah, Mr. Russell, let me update you. This is no longer on the council salary issue was taken off the agenda because there's no support here for moving on that item. So the only agenda item that we're talking about here is approving the minutes for the meeting. Okay. So if you're aware of an error in the minutes, you can please identify that, and we'd like to hear about that. But you can't speak on issues
okay.
other than...
One last question. Are you saying it's been taken off the agenda item?
Yes, sir. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. That happened at our meeting last Thursday.
Okay, I didn't know when it was going to be on the agenda item. I understand it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. The next item on our agenda is item 4. We hear repeats on or hear reports on meeting. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back to agenda item 3. Now that we've had our blue card, is there a motion to approve those minutes? Thank you, Mr. Luna and Mr. Freeman. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Next item is agenda item 4, to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Mr. Thompson.
Yesterday, Vice Mayor Luna and Councilmember Freeman and I we're honored to participate or to be invited to observe the deployment ceremony for the 98th Signal Battalion Corps. They're doing a 400-day deployment overseas, and it was truly an honor to be there and to see. I've been through many deployments before, but never one with the Signal Corps in the Army, and just to see how they did it was really. It was really fascinating, and it was really heartfelt, I think, from everyone that was there, especially with their family members there, knowing that they're going to be gone for 400 days and miss a lot of the holidays and birthdays and so forth. So tremendous opportunity for us. We were happy to represent the city of Mesa. Thank you.
On Thursday, I told Mr. Heredia asked a great question about I think the topic that prompted it was a report on Skybridge, and Frankie pointed out that there were a new administration coming into Mexico, and was there going to continue to be support for this program? I had the honor of being part of a delegation from the U.S. Conference of Mayors of going to the inauguration over the weekend, and had the opportunity while there to talk with Mexican officials about that, had the opportunity to, with Governor Ducey a couple of times, ask those kind of pointed questions. And I was very impressed with the attitudes and the enthusiasm for continuing that program with Mexican officials. In particular, there's a new senator representing the state of Sonora that is part of the president's party and very much of an insider in the incoming administration. Had a great meeting with him. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for additional engagement with Mexican government. There's a lot of enthusiasm right now with the movement that not the party rather, but the movement that is now in office there. So I'm looking forward to maybe sharing more of the details of that, but in engaging the council with working with some of the folks that we were able to talk to over the weekend. Other reports on conferences attended? Mr. Brady, help us with scheduling of future meetings.
Just a reminder, we will not have a study session this Thursday. It has been canceled. And the next study session will be Monday, December 10th. And we'll review the review agenda one more time and have the council meeting at 5:45. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. We are adjourned, and we'll convene shortly upstairs.